Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
Bob Cole, what do you think about the imprisonment of Bradley Manning? And not so much, I mean, we could talk about how he's being treated or was being treated.
This is on the, we're hypothetically talking as if he were the person who was the source. We don't know that.
We don't know that for sure. But what kind of a case is there against him? If
you have to have a statute that prohibits certain behavior. And then this guy's in the military, and there may be, you know, they may have more preventative powers than ordinary civil courts. I just don't know about that. They shouldn't, really, but I think they might. But you have to have a statute, and then you have to have a good cause for thinking that this person violated the statute. And if you were a conscientious prosecutor, you would go through this legal analysis, a constitutional analysis yourself, of whether you think you could constitutionally apply it to this guy. Now, I wanted to say, it parallel to that, about what Dan just said. He said he realized at some point he was complicit in the wrong thing and he had to do something about it. Now, at that point, and one of the reasons he knew that was because he knew that what the government was doing was wrong. Now, a key issue when you think about the ethics of whistleblowing, and again about the ethics of media disclosure, is, well, how do I mean, the media is sort of easier. You don't have to know whether the government was right or wrong. You just want to get the information out there. But if in Dan's case, he had to think about, well, how do I know that? Why is my view on why the government is wrong better than their view? And I think one way that whistleblower law takes account of that question is to say, well, the first thing you should do is go through channels. And you did that in talking to Fulbright. You found a kind of channel that discounts your own judgment and makes sure that what you're saying, I'm justified in this because those guys are wrong, is really correct.
But wouldn't you would have been convicted under the Espionage Act had not the plumbers.
No, let me comment on that because I do have an unusual. I'm a layman here, not a like my classmate Bob Cole is a law professor. I'm a defendant, but I do have an expensive education in this because I was the first person ever prosecuted for a leak of classified information in this country. I found that very few lawyers or judges or journalists actually are aware of that. My prosecution with Tony Russo was as unprecedented as the attempt to enjoin the press earlier on the Pentagon Papers as a civil action. So,
you weren't incarcerated, right? I mean, the Nixon administration.
No, I was out on bond. I was a civilian.
Right.
And it's not clear to me, Bob. You were Judge Advocate General. People in the military, don't they ever get bail, or is it always the case that you're put in jail while you're awaiting prosecution?
No, it's not always the case.
So, no, in other words, why is Manning being, let alone why?
That's what I said. I don't know the answer to that.
But there are statutes in the Uniform Code.
Okay, well, anyway.
He violated orders. He signed.
And anyway, I was allowed
because
personal
of military discipline,
bond.
I was just trying to contrast it with the Obama administration. The Nixon administration did not incarcerate you. The Obama administration not only is incarcerating Bradley Manning.
Well, Bradley Manning, but he is in the military.
But also is doing more investigations and prosecutions under leaking related to the Espionage Act than any administration in the history of the United States.
You're right, and not many people are so aware of that. I congratulate you.
Right, there is 150 FBI agents and prosecutors assigned to a special unit in the National Security Division of the Justice Department, which has been revived since 9/11, along with some of the investigators are out of the Pentagon. So they are understood. The irony here is a liberal democratic administration is doing, so to self-describe, is doing more prosecutions and incarcerating people, denying bail, or denying keeping them in custody than the Nixon administration.
Well, that applies to Bradley. But let me expand on that just for a moment. As I said, I was told that I could be prosecuted under 18 U.S.C., commonly known as the Espionage Act, and I assumed that was true. What I was not told, and of course everyone who signs a secrecy agreement reads that to this day, mm-hmm. always. And we're talking about millions of people here now. What none of them are told in that document is, prior to mine, what I wasn't told, no one ever had been prosecuted under this for a leak, although leaks occurred every other day or every week to some degree, constant. Of course, you didn't always know who the person doing the leak was, but often you did, in fact, in the government. And there had been no prosecutions. I didn't know that. I had a vague sense of it. There's a reason for that, and the reason is this. If you read 793, paragraphs D and E, and E, the unauthorized possessor giving information to an unauthorized person, which applies to Bradley Manning. The language of that clearly criminalizes what I did, or what Bradley Manning did, or what any of these leakers did. They are giving classified information or information relating to the national defense, which has been classified information has been taken as a test of that, that it relates to national defense, to an unauthorized person, a person without a clearance, let's say, who's totally unauthorized to get that, as happens all the time. The problem with that is, so that would seem, we were clearly violating that. The problem is that the act was, the legislative history of that it was not intended against to deal like a British-type Official Secrets Act, as you've pointed
right.
out.
The press is
even as early as 1917, when the act was passed, the Congress people who were passing on this made a very big point. We're Americans. We have a First Amendment. We have a right to know here. We do not want a British Official Secrets Act. And yet, they did write this language, which seems to apply. So that raises a question, well, what did they mean? Was that an accident, or does it apply or not? The problem with using that as if it were, or is it if it is, an Official Secrets Act, is twofold. First of all, it's so broad that it applies not only to the official or the unofficial person who gives this information. The wording applies in plain language just as well to the journalists who deal with it, who are unauthorized and who give it to unauthorized people. And it applies to every one of you if you've read the New York Times, and especially if you possess and retain it, if you haven't taken an effort to return the information to the proper authorities, that's in the language of the act. In fact, that's one of the things that Thomas Drake is accused of, failure to return, retaining it. Or second, if you shared it with another member of your family, said, look at this article, in the New York Times, or if a member of your family read it on your computer screen, you are as guilty of that as the official who gave the information. Now, that's pretty broad. And by the way, I noticed that just 2 days ago, I think, in the Times, the Defense Department is threatening people in the Defense Department if they show this Guantanamo information to members of their family, the members of the family could be prosecuted. Now, that seems, I don't know how people read that. They say, what in the world are they possibly talking about? The answer is 793 makes that a crime if it does apply to this. So the big question is, in that interpretation, is it constitutional? Going back to what Bob was saying earlier, is giving anything that's classified, whatever it is, of sufficient harm to the country that anybody showing any of that information to anybody else who isn't classified is guilty of a crime? You were asking, should it be subject to prior restraint? That's an even higher restriction. But let's put aside the prior restraint and say, should they be prosecuted? You said I could be convicted. The issue was not whether I could be found guilty of having violated the wording of that act. There was no question about that. But was the act constitutional in that effect? And the reason there were only exactly three prosecutions prior to Obama, mine, Samuel Loring Morrison 10 years later, and the APEC case under George W. Bush, which was dropped by Obama, those are the three cases that had ever been prosecuted for a leak. And the reason was they were always afraid that if they pressed this forward and it went to the Supreme Court, the act would be found unconstitutional, and it would be revealed, what is the case, that Congress has never passed into law and the law been signed a British-type Official Secrets Act, which criminalizes all this information. Nearly everyone assumes that we do have such an act. As Lowell said, most countries do. And our mother country, Britain, a democracy, does have that. Yeah. So people assume that we have it too, as I did when I took these acts. We don't, as a matter of fact. And we shouldn't. That's another separate question, which I think is very important. Yeah.
There's a lot of focus on whether the leakers did something wrong, but what obligation does the government have here to protect these secrets?
Well, I think this is the part of the Bradley Manning story that hasn't been reported out. So actually I started to do that just before I came here a couple of days ago. And by that I mean, if you believe the email accounts that were published in Wired magazine, he simply put a CD-ROM into his laptop computer and downloaded the information onto his laptop computer. No one said anything. Security in the offices that he was in was very lax. He ridiculed it in some of the messages, and he was just freely doing it. So if you look back at that issue, there's been very little reporting on it, but it turns out that in 2008, first of all, this is classified information. It's not top secret information that Dan Ellsberg made public or passed on.
Yes, Obama, by the way, the other day he was asked, isn't what Branning did the same as Ellsberg? And he said, Obama said, directly, it's on YouTube, no, what Ellsberg did was, Ellsberg's material was classified in a different way. Yes, it was very much higher. It was top secret rather than secret.
Yet,
technically, he was right.
Not to critique the content of the material, but it was historical material that was primarily damaging to Democratic administrations. So there's always been a question of why did the Nixon administration want to protect Johnson and Kennedy? But we won't get into that today.
They
were worried that there was more, weren't they?
The minute it came out, Nixon's concern was, can we get the Diem assassination, which implicated John F. Kennedy, out? And he said to Haldeman, he said, the injunction was only to the Times, right? Post. And then the Post. So they lost the Times and the Post as a way to get that out. So they got it in a Chicago paper.
Right. So what I was looking at was the question of, wait a second now. These are people dealing with classified information for which this guy is now locked up. There's a grand jury meeting in the Eastern District of Virginia trying to do additional investigations related to WikiLeaks and how the information got further. But how did the information get out? Who approved the use of these computers and allowed people to download onto a CD? Who's responsible for the lack of security around this material? It turns out that in 2008, there was an order that went out that disabled all of the USB and other ports on government computers with classified information, not because they suspected leaking, but because they were getting viruses into the government system. They allowed the CD-ROM to continue until October of 2010. That is after the Wired material was published. So far, I've been unable to get a confirmation from the Pentagon or the Army about whether there is any internal investigation going on who else leaked, who else downloaded. Did someone from a foreign government get access to the material on their own? What is going on? The unconfirmed information I'm getting back from people who are more familiar with this issue is that the Pentagon is really just totally embarrassed by all of this.
But this is somewhat...
I just raise this as a question because if there is a serious security issue here, I think the security issue, which apparently has not been investigated, nor has Congress announced any hearings, is the lack of security that allowed this to happen. Whether you agree with what happened or not, it does not appear that the government had normal security that you would find in almost every major corporation around its proprietary secrets.
Have they changed any policies since then?
They have changed the policy and instructions as to how to use the CD-ROM and whether you can. So far, that's all I've been able to...
You left out a very nice detail. He didn't just put in a CD-ROM in the thing. That what they were doing was listening, the people who were doing this work were listening to CDs during the day as they listened. So he brought in a CD of Lady Gaga, and he put that into the system to listen to it. He actually downloaded, he made it blank,
right.
He erased the Lady Gaga and lip-synced to Lady Gaga while he was actually downloading
the Well, that's what he describes in the emails that were published.
But there are different levels.
Was it poker face, or what was he? Yeah. What was he?
There are different levels at which the government can screw up. But your question, what should the government think about itself? I mean, that you need internal processes for that, and in particular at the top level, you need to have lawyers who are independent, you know, who are not going to just tell you whatever you want to hear, and are going to advise you on whether these are a good programs or not. And that's part of conscientious internal management.
But look, may I say that interesting as this question is, that it's kind of a distraction because it implies that there's a major problem here, that the government can't keep its secrets, doesn't keep secrets well enough. The problem is not holes in our secrecy system. In fact, in the terrible disasters we're looking at right now, whether you look at natural ones or 9/11 imposed on us, or the self-inflicted ones where the major victims are foreigners, such as our attack on Iraq or the escalation in Afghanistan, which of these disasters was facilitated or caused by a leak or by a failure of secrecy or the idea that we didn't have enough secrets? We're keeping secrets madly now as though that had proven to be the problem. Actually, it hasn't proven to be the problem at all. And the fact is the government keeps its secrets all too well.
So are there any secrets that are worth keeping?
Yes, absolutely, and they're kept. Most of them are kept very well indefinitely.
Give some examples.
Indefinitely. Well, okay. Yes, very easily. Contrary to what I just said, I'll give some examples of secrets that should have been kept that weren't kept. How about that? In other words, bad leaks. Two words, Valerie Plame, to start. A clandestine operator whose work was useful, opposing tracking proliferation of nuclear materials, had to be clandestine, had to be secret, had to be lied about. That was in the national interest for that to happen. And it was a mistake, wrong. In fact, it was illegal. I'll come back to that in a moment. It was illegal for Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney to release her name as a clandestine operator. In that case, we do have a narrow Official Secrets Act for the identities of clandestine operators, and they were violating all that, although the conditions of that are so rigorous that it's a little hard to prove.
Right, but I think there's two separate questions here. One is leaking, usually whoever leaks or a source, let's say, who's giving you information that they shouldn't be giving you, mm-hmm. generally speaking, has an agenda of their own. That's why they're leaking, whether it's because they think they're going to stop a war or mm-hmm. help stop a war or assuage their conscience about what they did or participated in. Mm-hmm. The fact is, from a journalism point of view, we have to look at the motivation of the leaker. Because do we get
the question I was addressing was, are there secrets that should be kept? Yes, her name should have been kept. And there was a case that it was, in fact, leaked, and that was an error.
But shouldn't nuclear secrets should be kept?
And again,
Wen Ho Lee was able to do just what Bradley Manning did. He mm-hmm. downloaded information onto computer drives with unauthorized mm-hmm. by in doing it.
We still don't know his motives or whether that harmed anything, but yes, that was he was certainly violating regulations. And I am not against, I'm in fact in favor of a law which we have. We do have a narrow Official Secrets Act, as I'm sure you know, that does cover nuclear design details and nuclear stockpile aspects and so forth. I approve of that. When the Progressive magazine, run by friends of mine, like Irwin Knoll, published something they said was or wanted to publish, a design of a thermonuclear weapon that showed the secret, the Teller Ulam secret of design of nuclear weapon, that might make it easier and faster for a middle-sized country like Egypt to get an H-bomb rather than an A-bomb sooner than otherwise. Those people expected me to testify for them on absolute First Amendment grounds. I said, no, I approve of the law that restrains that information. I don't want that information out. I'm even willing to see an injunction on that point. So that they've never, in a way,
forgiven. So there are limits.
What?
There are limits.
Oh, there are secrets that should be secret. A whole other category, finally, is certain communications intelligence things. Again, if we knew, for example, that we had a double agent who was handling all the email for Al-Qaeda and was working for us, basically, the identity of that mole should remain secret. Again, we have a case where we did have a mole. It didn't remain secret. Somebody leaked it, and Condoleezza Rice confirmed it, which was a very stupid thing to do. Hard to imagine how she did that. But that was wrong.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Okay. You know, Julian Assange has a different point of view about all this. He has a sense that that transparency is absolute, and
actually he doesn't. I asked him, do you think there should be no secrets, that there should be total transparency? I asked him that in London. He said, of course not. That's absurd.
But he did, with WikiLeaks,
he's often described as being in favor of total transparency. That's a mistake. He's not.
Yeah.
If you leak thousands of documents without reviewing them yourself, right, then you don't know what's in them. Some of it might be of it might be the kind of thing you think should be protected.
Yeah.
Most of it probably isn't, but some. So, yeah. I mean, what burden does that put on the leaking or, source? What's he supposed to do?
We had Julian Assange by Skype recently at Berkeley in the symposium, and previously a year before, and I think he would agree that he's learned a lot over the last year about the process, about, for example, excising names when people were put in danger, and also the fact that if you put documents up on the web, they're not going to have much of an impact unless they're digested in some fashion.
You're referring to that. They've changed their process quite a bit, WikiLeaks.
Right. Yeah. Right.
In fact, their first idea was, as you said, they just put it on the web.
Right, and then nobody wanted to read them because they were
and
too
then
long.
Second,
and
I think their first release, you were referring to, Bob, of the Afghan material where they did redact a lot of names, but not sufficiently, and there were names that should not have been released.
The people who are collaborators or human rights
might have
activists.
Been put in danger, and that was a mistake. That shouldn't have happened. There were people inside WikiLeaks, apparently, who objected to that. Assange, as I say, is not in favor of total transparency, but he goes a lot further than I would. The things I've said should be secret. I'm not sure he would totally agree on all of those.
Bob Cole, were you trying to get something? Do you want to say something? Or Bob? No. Okay, sorry.
No.
Quick question to you, Lowell. Do you consider Assange a journalist? I mean, is he the same kind of journalist you are?
I don't know if kind of journalist. I don't know if I'd wish it
if
on anyone.
If only there were more like Lowell.
Want to clone me?
Yeah.
I think he's a new kind of journalist. I think in reflecting on it, I don't think he's purely just a source. He clearly is not just an intermediary. I'll give you an example. In the tobacco stories going back, there were two different kinds of people that I dealt with. One was Jeffrey Wigand, who had been an executive, and while he had documents, he also had personal experience inside the company, and that was what really made him valuable. Then there was a gentleman named Merle Williams, who had been a paralegal in a law firm that represented Brown and Williams in tobacco, and he stole 5,000 documents from inside, I mean literally under his shirt, took them out, copied them, made an attempt to blackmail the company with the documents after he left. That didn't work. He got sued, and then he turned to the press. Now, he is, in a sense, a conduit or a leaker, if you will, of the documents, but he doesn't have much more status beyond that. He didn't participate in any of the activities in the company. He didn't author the documents. He took some risks. So you get different kinds of people with different roles presenting information.
Does it matter to you what their motivation is?
Yeah, sure, because A, they may be removing documents that they don't want you to see that may not prove their side of the story. There may be factors in terms of what they're doing and why they're doing it. So all of that's very important in terms of assessing
but
what you're getting.
It matters to you as a matter of professional assessment. You're not saying that ethically, but maybe you are, ethically, it matters to me what their motives are.
Sure.
Is that consistent with your general view that prima facie everything that we think is newsworthy gets published?
You know, could I say, when you mentioned the tobacco...
Let's let Lowell answer that first.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the question is. I mean, if I meet you and you tell me a bunch of things that you say are secret,
you're going to evaluate.
I have to evaluate what it is. If it's information that potentially could harm others by getting out there, I've got to decide whether or not that's worth publishing or not, or whoever's going to publish. So there are all these different stages in it. I should point out, by the way, that leaking documents is as old as George Washington. And being confidential sources without necessarily being confidential, it's sometimes coming out, it has been going on for a very long time, long before the internet. And there's a book by Mark Feldstein, a professor at, I think he's at George Washington University, on Jack Anderson and the press and Nixon. And it's very interesting, and it ends with this famous incident that Jack Anderson, the columnist, dies, and the FBI wants to get into his house to take all the documents back that filled up his basement and attic and so on. They're all classified, top secret. He had a naval officer inside the White House who was a source, a fellow Mormon, who was a code clerk, who provided him with top secret communications and lots of columns. So the idea of having this kind of information, in fact, that would have probably violated the communications section of the Espionage Act, this has been going on for a long time. And generally speaking, people have agendas for doing it, and Washington is the place where everyone does it.
All right. Let some of our audience ask questions. If you would just say, if you feel like it, tell us your name and what your question
is. My name is David Michaelis. I'm a foreigner. And I was wondering, the biggest difference for me is that WikiLeaks versus Pentagon Papers is that WikiLeaks is an international consortium of hackers and other people who are interested in freedom of information. What would have happened if Manning would have given his CD to the Huffington Post and not to WikiLeaks? And what would happen if Assange would be extradited to the USA?
So
it's not an American-centric problem as it's been.
Yeah, so the question is, WikiLeaks is not U.S.-based, so how does U.S. law apply and in terms of Bradley Manning and also in terms of Julian Assange?
Well, if there are events in this country that themselves could be viewed as violating a statute, I don't think maybe I'm not getting the drift of what you're saying, but if I leak documents that have an effect in this country, they had a source in this country, I think that the country has jurisdiction to deal with the problem. They may not be able to get the guy if he's not here. And as you, I think I heard you say, ask about extradition, there may be that they have to resort to a treaty that may or may not allow them to get the person here in this country. But there's a connection between these leaks and the United States sufficient to give the United States jurisdiction over the behavior if they can get jurisdiction over the person.
No, but Assange isn't a leaker, right? I mean, he's just publishing them.
I don't know. Physically, I don't know who did what. I assume that physically somebody in this country got some device that allowed him to reproduce a bunch of papers.
So you're saying it's essentially the New York Times, but it's not based in this country, and which increasingly with websites and bloggers, I mean, that's where they don't, you know, they live
but
in cyberspace.
You know, if you have, you know, when you have a whole international community of people doing stuff on the internet, I think it does raise an issue of what kind of jurisdiction any given country has over these events. And you know, maybe there's just like there's a free trade within the United States between the states and the Commerce Clause protects that, maybe we're developing or will develop a kind of international law of free trade and ideas that no country has power over. Just pie in the sky, but it's a possibility.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
speak up if you would.
Yeah. Mr. Ellsberg, you published a open letter to Amazon criticizing them for suppressing information after WikiLeaks came out. What is, like, your realistic understanding of the role that companies like Amazon or PayPal might play in government transparency and compared to what you'd like to see?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you.
The open letter that you published criticizing Amazon for suppressing information about WikiLeaks, was it?
Well, they canceled their commercial arrangement,
right.
So you couldn't
access it through
Amazon or PayPal. You couldn't send them money.
Yeah, my understanding at the time was that, and still is, that in particular under pressure from Senator Lieberman's office, his staff, they just immediately dropped their association with Assange, who, after all, has not been charged with any crime. And what I've been leading up to, in a way, is I really question whether a crime has been committed here in terms of a constitutional law, a law that will be found to be constitutional in this country. But anyway, I thought that was a kind of corporate servility or acting as a partner or a function of the government in suppressing information, a flow of information to the public, which Amazon, of all people, should not be engaged in. So although I was spending a lot of money for me on Amazon every year buying books from them, I cut off my association with them. By the way, an interesting point is they still do sell the Pentagon Papers on Amazon, and that's very interesting. The Pentagon Papers have not been declassified. They are not declassified. Just as the Pentagon is saying right now that the Guantanamo Papers cannot be downloaded on a computer by the defense attorneys at Guantanamo because they're classified, even though the lawyers have clearances, but their computers are not cleared for classified information, which is in the New York Times. So they cannot download the New York Times. Literally, this sounds absurd, but that's the way the regulations work. Now, in the case of the Pentagon Papers, they are still regarded as classified, large parts of them. The government printing office actually did declassify a large part of it, but with great deletions. And those deletions are still regarded as classified, and they are available from Amazon. Somebody should bring this to their attention. I wouldn't mind seeing them prosecuted on this point, actually.
All right.
They deserve it. They've asked for it.
All right. And on that note, thanks to all our panelists, Daniel Ellsberg, Will Bergman, and Robert Cole. Thanks to you for your questions. Questions, and I invite...